It's Margaret B. with the red tram hat from Bicycle, Indiana. I hope everyone enjoyed our first podcast that we posted last week with Bryce from Team Heroes. I received a lot of good feedback, and I really enjoy hearing that people really liked the discussion, so that's really great. On this week's episode, this is a discussion between a really good friend that I met in 2019, and he is a local business owner, local bike shop owner, and we kind of just discuss about the ups and downs of the industry, but the ups and downs of being a small business owner, as well as kind of where things are now in the cycling industry. So I really hope everyone enjoys this discussion between this great person. And again, if you are new to this channel, this podcast, please take a moment, go to bicycleindiana.org, check our website out, check our social media platforms out. We've got a lot of great content, as well as if you aren't a member, please go to our website and join. That helps support us, myself, advocate, as well as educate across the state of Indiana for cycling, but most important, on a legislative level, but also in general, being an advocate for cycling and education and safety. So please check it out, and I really hope you enjoy this discussion. All right, enjoy. All right, welcome to our Life Behind Bars podcast by Bicycle Indiana. Margaret here, Margaret Baraskis. I'm the executive director of Bicycle Indiana, and I'm really excited about the guest today. This is somebody that I met in, I think, 2019, and we'll kind of talk about that here. But this individual is a really awesome person that I met that is a bike shop owner, as well as a pretty serious biker and runner. So I would like to introduce Matthias. I'm so sorry. Maybe because in my phone it says Matthias, because I made it anyway.
And just like I always mispronounce your last name. Let's hear it. Just one for the record.
Baraskis.
Of course. That's exactly what I was gonna say.
Well, Michael, welcome to the show. You're my second interview, my second podcast. So I'm really excited for you to be here. But first off, let's just talk about you. Tell me about yourself. You're a bike shop owner, and yeah, I'll let you take the floor.
Yeah. Well, thanks for the introduction. I'm happy to be here. And I am a cyclist. I'm also a small business owner. I do own Marion Cycle Works. And as far as running goes, I'm a very amateur runner. Like it'd just be me trying to catch up with you basically and running. So I've been dabbling in that, but yeah, other than operating a bike shop, riding, running, camping, hiking, like to be outside, like to garden, like to relax. Other than that, I like hanging out with friends and just kind of living the good life. And
nice.
That's what I'm into. You know, if you want to know any of the history of how I got to that point, I'm happy to.
I do. I will. So first off, owner of my Marion Cycle Works in Marion, Indiana. I had to think Correct. About this for a little bit of when I first met you and the circumstances. And it was in 2019, I think. And it was with my previous job with the Nike League, which if people are new to Bicycle Indiana or new to me, I used to run a youth mountain bike league that's called the Indiana Interscholastic Cycling League. I know that's kind of a mouthful, but the Indiana Nike League was part of a large organization called NICA, which stands for National Interscholastic Cycling Association. I'm going to be testing you on those acronyms later.
Absolutely.
But I was in charge of creating school-based mountain bike cycling teams across the state of Indiana and then putting on races. And there is the league is still functioning now with a good friend named John Leitzel, but that is how I met you. I had a meet and greet or a dirt tour is what we called it. And we had a meeting at your shop, and that was back in 2019.
Yeah. Wild. Time flies, huh?
I know.
And that was pre-COVID and pre-bike industry nightmare.
Yeah. And we're going to talk about that.
Bike boom, you know? So yeah, we've been through a lot since then. It's been pretty wild. So and I believe when you were in here for the NYCA event, we had been open a very short time. I think maybe a couple months. Does that sound right?
I want to say, yeah, you were definitely really new. And that's actually a good transition into my kind of first question is tell me a little bit about the history of you deciding, one, to open up your own bike shop, but just the ups and the downs in the process of starting a bike shop.
Yeah. So, you know, first of all, the shop's in Marion, Indiana, which is, for those of you listening, we're about an hour north of Indianapolis, 3 hours south of Chicago, kind of in between Muncie and Fort Wayne. So we're a small city. We're about 28, 29,000 people. I'm originally from this county, from Grant County. And, you know, prior to having the shop, I worked at a shop here in town that had been here for years and really, you know, I was already in love with the bicycle and I loved mechanics and I loved riding and it just all kind of fell together. So, yeah, I worked at another kind of small family owned shop for, I want to say 4 years, maybe a little longer than that. And that shop kind of went through some potential ownership changes. And, you know, I ended up leaving on good terms and it was a really cool experience. And yeah, I ended up having a lot of customers follow me. I was kind of working out of my garage for a short time and it just kind of blew up. I don't really know. I had a lot of people hitting me up on social media, sending me texts like, hey, can you still work on our bike? Where are you? Like, what are you doing? So yeah, moving forward from there, my wife was just kind of like, hey, we need to like maybe look into getting a shop. Like, I think you could do this. And yeah, it seems so unrealistic to actually find a building and have a real business and not be working on bikes in my garage. So so the next step was I started looking at buildings and I found a building downtown Marion, which was actually down, it still is down the street from the shop that I worked at. And it's just like, was exactly what I was looking for, totally out of my budget. The owner gave me some really good deals and, you know, just to kind of get started. And when we opened, I think we got the building in spring of 19, maybe early summer of 19. And then, you know, I was just working odd jobs, fixing bikes in the garage, painting houses, doing yard work, whatever I could do to raise money, you know.
You used to be a photographer, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So before I did cycling, I did photography full time for about three and a half years. And that was great too. That kind of like got me excited about making my own money, you know, like being a business owner and really putting the work in. So yeah, and I'll get on, you know, we can get on that topic later too. Like I really like to integrate my photography with bikes as well. And
Definitely.
Yeah. So, once I had the building and it was kind of like, you know, I had no business loan, I'd been kind of unemployed for like 6 months. And, as anyone that's listening knows, to open a business, takes money up front. You either have to have someone to invest or you have to take out some huge loans or just have a bunch of money stockpiled. And I had none of that. So, just kind of opened
adventure.
I had like a shelf full of tubes and a couple lights and some locks. And, I don't even think I had a point of sale system hooked up. I think it was just, you know, all very, very basic, but essentially that whole summer, I spent my time just getting the shop ready to open, doing the build out, painting, doing a floor plan. And so, yeah, we opened in October, late October of 19. So we opened in the off season. And we opened right before the pandemic. So, you know, none of that was really my business plan. So, it took off from there. And I got, you know, I assumed, well, maybe the only customers that are going to come in are my dad, maybe like a couple of people that I knew from the other shop. And that was not the case. I had a lot of like loyal repeat customers right away. And I slowly started having people come in that I'd never seen before. And that was super exciting to me. So spring of 2020 hit and it just got crazy. Like we sold every single bike we had. We sold every tire, every tube, and couldn't get anything else, you know? And so that was kind of like the first chunk of having the shop and owning it.
Yeah.
And that was kind of like, I would say phase one of getting the bike shop opened.
You know, something that what I loved about your shop and what one, I loved meeting you and your personality and how you ran your shop, but also your look. And for our listeners, I don't know how we could describe your shop, but maybe you could kind of like visually describe what your shop kind of looks like.
Yeah. And how I'd be happy to at least like describe what my vision for the shop is. I think ultimately, you know, things like businesses or anything where you're putting kind of your heart and soul and whatever creativity you have into it. I think there's a perception that you have of your own shop. And then there's also the perception that all your customers are going to have and your friends and family. So I'm really excited to like build that perception of how people view us. But all I can really give you is how my vision for the shop and how I perceive it. And really what I wanted when I first opened was I wanted a kind of a local like neighborhood shop.
Yeah.
Where people could come in, maybe who had not been on a bike in 20, 30 years and feel comfortable having that conversation. Like, what's it going to take to get me on a decent bike so that I can enjoy cycling? And at the same time, I wanted to have a shop where people could come in and maybe grab some boutique stuff and, you know, talk about race history, talk about like cycling in Grant County. It could bring in their $10,000, $12,000 bikes, still have them serviced extremely well with a lot of attention. I really wanted to have both of those. I really wanted to be more of a destination shop. And that's really something that is kind of it's an everyday for me, you know, making sure that like every customer that comes in the door, whether they have a $10 garage sale bike or they have a $10,000 tri bike, making sure that I treat them the same way with the same amount of attention.
Absolutely.
And that's really something that it was really a pet peeve of mine. I love visiting other shops. I love going in them. And 99.9% of the time, the shops are awesome. The owners are a little wacky. You know, it's got a cool history. Like they're passionate yeah, right? about it. I love that. It's what kind of fuels my fire. But that one time you go into a shop and, you know, whoever's working in there either tries to oversell you or they don't take you serious because you don't have a certain type of bike, or you're excited about getting started, you know, you want to get into this sport, for whatever the reason may be. I really wanted a shop that was going to kind of touch all of those, important subjects for me that are going to like check everything off the list. But also being small, I don't really want to be a big shop. A lot of people ask like, oh, you're going to grow, you need more room, you're going to expand. I really don't want that. I have, you know, friends that have bigger shops and they're great and they're awesome. And, for them, it's working. For me, like with my vision, I really want to stay small. I just want to become more refined, more efficient, be able to give people better service, just an even better experience when they come in. And I'm really finding that that's what's making the business slowly grow and sustain, especially through COVID, was that people were loyal. And, I had people traveling from India, I had people traveling from Fort Wayne, and all the surrounding counties to come to this tiny shop that more than likely doesn't have that one thing in stock you're looking for, you know, that they're going to have to order it and get it the next day. So, but they like the service, you know? And, so that's kind of what we've been leaning into. And that's my vision, is to have a shop that, gives great attention, is well curated, is really, really heavy on the experience. Like I really want a shop that's a destination shop that people want to come and see, and then, hey, while they're here, maybe they're going to buy some parts, you know, maybe they're going to buy some repair stuff. Maybe they're going to buy a t-shirt. So yeah, that's kind of my vision. What it's forming into is sort of that. I feel like it's evolving and changing, you know, over the past few years. And as I visit shops and I read, about the bike industry, and I learn more and I learn those hard lessons, the shop is definitely changing and kind of molding, into what I really think it should be. So yeah, probably the next time we talk in like 5 years, we do another podcast and I'll let you know how the vision's lining up, you know?
Definitely. Well, and I honestly have been watching you grow since kind of when you started opening, when I first met you. And
that's right.
And you said it perfect. I mean, cycling is intimidating. If you don't know what parts you need, what kind of bike you want, you know, what type of riding you want to do. I really think that you are covering everything and creating a less intimidating space for new riders and even experienced riders.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad to hear that, because that's the goal. So Let's keep pushing, getting people on bikes, you know. People ride for different reasons, as you know. So I want to be here for all of those, you know, whatever it takes to get people on bikes.
Definitely. So since you've mentioned this a couple of times, and I know this might be a longer discussion, but COVID, let's talk about COVID. I mean, everyone, every industry, whether it was cycling or not, was impacted by the COVID pandemic. And as a small business owner, you obviously touched a couple times in your discussion a minute ago, but how did COVID impact you as a shop?
Yeah, well, I'm guessing that my story and experience is going to be fairly similar to most shops. Probably the first thing I saw was, of course, right spring of 2020, right when like COVID was becoming a thing and it was starting to affect inventory, but we really hadn't seen it in the retail level. It was mostly most of my reps, some of my distributors were saying things like, hey, I know sales are up right now, but just a heads up, you know, things aren't looking good. Like you better buy some stuff, start stocking up on tubes and tires. And honestly, my first thought was, this is like, they're just trying to get me to buy more stuff.
You know? Right.
They just want me to buy more stuff. It's a scare tactic. And so, yeah, spring of 2020, like I said, I sold every bike that we had in here in like a matter of days. And it was like unbelievable. It was a real confidence boost to just open a business and then just be selling out and not being able to, I couldn't get it fast enough to sell it. And then the next order I put in, sold it all. The next order I put in, it was like some stuff didn't come in. And, you know, like a month or two down the road, I couldn't get cables. I couldn't get tubes. I couldn't get grips, saddles, anything bike related was just gone. So right. I had to really, you know, we've had to start getting creative and finding parts. I started like saving tubes for people, which I never thought I would do.
Right.
Saving used bike tubes, saving decent used tires, just anything, you know. And I'd say kind of after we got used to that and that got normal, the luster, the excitement of all the sales kind of wore off for me because I started losing so many sales. I had so many people walking in the door. They're like, hey, we want to order this $5,000 bike, a $6,000 bike. And I'm like, no problem. And you go to look it up and they're all out of stock. And you know, the ETA is like, well, you know, maybe they'll have it in a few months. So people would put a deposit down or they'd pay for it. And that few months would turn into 6 months. And then that turned into a year and 2 years. So there was stuff that I had on order I never received or, you know, had to cancel the order. So we ended up just returning people's money and just all the stuff you don't want to do in small business, you know, losing sales. And so I would say, you know, that kind of brings us into like, say, late 2022, 2023. You know, we're still kind of we're figuring out what brands we wanted to carry because a lot of the brands we approached as a new shop, they had all these great deals, but they couldn't promise us any inventory. So, you know, for us to invest the time and the money into a brand, whether it be for accessories or complete bikes, it's really been a rocky road. And so we're still kind of ironing that out. 2024, I think, is looking much better. You know, I don't think it's like going to be the best, but I think it's a lot better than where we were. So I'm excited now. Things are, I hate to say like coming back to normal because it's like, it'll never be what it was.
Right.
But that doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to be worse. I think that, you know, if the bike industry went way up in 2020 and then it went slowly down the next couple of years, you know, wherever it planes out at, I still think it's going to be a little higher than 19. And this is just, you know, from what I'm reading and hearing from other people in the industry. So, yeah, I'm really hoping 2024 is going to be like a good solid year for not just shops, but also like pedestrian infrastructure, cycling infrastructure, events. It seems like there's a lot of cycling. Obviously, gravel has exploded. Like gravel events are getting crazy. So yeah, I'm like really excited for this year. And I feel really fortunate that I was able to survive as a new business through COVID and that time period. Looking back, I think a lot of it was, you know, our inventory was lean. I'm owner operator, so we didn't have 10 employees. You know, I'm here early, I'm here late. So a lot of those things that we had to do by necessity just to survive and stay open really was kind of our savior in the end, you know? So we came out fairly strong, you know?
I remember even telling me you'd go to like Walmart and buy tubes and like
you had to
take
bring
every
up,
tube
you
could.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, there was a time where I was so desperate for tubes. And of course, you know, if you work in a shop, you know that you sell the tube and the margin's decent on the tube, but ultimately, or typically your profit's going to come from that labor, you know, putting the tube right. in. So if you don't have that one small part, you therefore can't make the money or the profit on the labor. And so, yeah, what I was getting so desperate that, you know, I'd have someone wheel a 20-inch bike in. Hey, my grandson has a flat. No, it should be no problem to change it in a bike shop. But when you're like, yeah, we don't have any 20-inch tubes, we can't change it. You know, the next thing I do is go to like Walmart or Meijer. So what I was doing was every morning I would go to Walmart, Meijer, any kind of like sporting goods stores. And I would basically just buy every single tube that they had. And then I would bring all those back to the shop. And then as people came in to get their bikes fixed, I would just resell them the tube I just bought, but I would make the profit on the labor.
Yeah.
And that was also huge. Like I never thought that that would be something that we'd have to do, but, it worked, you know?
Hey, you gotta do what you gotta do.
Absolutely.
But you touched on this as well as COVID, you know, happened and now we're kind of back, as you said, normal. I've been hearing a little bit of rumblings as I visit shops and just talking to reps and talking to other cycling, you know, individuals in the state and not even necessarily in Indiana. But do you feel that there's like an abundance of bike stuff now and trying to sell it and there's too much and what do we do and what are your things or thoughts about that, I guess?
Yeah, that's a great question. Yeah, my thoughts on like, you know, like the overstock, you know, we're definitely seeing some of that. But what I'm seeing is that there are some bikes that are literally buy one, get one free at a wholesale level and also at a consumer level, you know, even direct to consumer. However, there's other bikes that are still out of stock and that I can't get, you know, and should
right.
be in stock. So it was almost kind of like a ripple effect, you know, and I think we'll still see that ripple effect. I just think the ripple is going to keep getting smaller. It's a swing of the pendulum. It's going to go one way. It'll swing back the other way. And at some point it's going to kind of slow back down. So absolutely. There are definitely brands that, you know, when COVID happened, all these brands freaked out and they canceled all their orders with the manufacturers. And then
right.
shortly after that, they said, no, we want to put in even bigger orders. So then, you know, that was another ripple effect. And
right.
of course, you know, then they have to pay for this. So all of these little details, from the designer to the manufacturer to the distributor to the retailer, I mean, it's going to take time to sort of iron itself out. So yes, I'm definitely seeing there's like some crazy deals on things. You know, if someone's looking for a new bike, this is a pretty decent time to buy one. It does seem like the used market has dropped a bit, you know, at least what I'm seeing. And I'm assuming that's just because there is an abundance of bikes at the moment. But
right.
I think the good news from that is that in the long term, that just means more people own bikes, more people are on bikes, more people need them repaired, more people want accessories, more people want to ride. So ultimately, I think it's a great thing that people have them. But yeah, if somebody's looking for a bike, this is a great time to get it if you can find the one
right.
you're looking for.
Right. So speaking of products and brands, what brands and products do you mostly carry? Like what name brand bikes do you carry and kind of what do you sell at the shop?
Yeah. So, you know, we've gone through a few brands since we've opened. And a lot of that, again, has to do with inventory. Some brands have changed. Some brands have changed distributors. It's been a really weird time. Right now, we have kind of settled in to be an authorized dealer for Mozzie Bikes as well as Haro. They are also currently going through a brand change. However, our relationship with them has just been like really great. And you know, a lot of the other brands we sell in here, I really wanted sort of a curated type of shop vibe. So like, instead of having 20 different brands or types of like tire levers or lights, I really want to find one brand that really kind of covers all the bases for me that I can stand behind and sell. So like lights, we're doing Lazine lights for the most part. You know, we mostly do Defeat socks. I'm just like looking around the shop as you know, we do some, the only two brands of pumps we do are Lazine and Silka. So we do some Silka products as well. You know, like when someone comes over to buy bar tape, I really like to only have like one or two brands of bar tape. And we're still kind of experimenting with some of that stuff as well. As far as like, you know, repair parts, that kind of stuff, the more like behind the counter sort of thing, we really just stock like what works best for us. So like if we're selling something, a product in here, it's something we've used and inspected and we've put it through the ringer. We've had good luck. If I sell something and people are bringing it back in and they have a problem with it, I just won't sell it anymore, even if the margin's great, you know? And that's like typically in the business, that's one of like the hot points, like, oh, you can buy these tires, the margin's great, you know, you'll make money. And like, that's awesome because we're a business and we need to make money. But ultimately, long term, I want a product that's simple, works well for people. The brand's cool, you know. I don't want a brand that's all about the margin. I want a brand that's also like the owners ride bikes, you know.
Yeah.
So yeah, we're slowly still kind of curating what brands we sell. We sell a lot of Goodr sunglasses. That's probably like our most popular selling item in the shop, probably because it's extremely universal. We were selling Cali helmets for a while. We sold quite a few Cali helmets. Now we're kind of getting ready to look into some other brands. Same with bags. We have a bag brand that we're hoping to bring in like within the next week or so. So we'll see how that goes. So yeah, a lot of like exciting new stuff as we still sort of navigate through different distributors and brands and like finding what works for us. We love Wahoo. Had a great, I don't know, a lot of computers, you know, you sell, get returned because not because they don't work, but because people don't know how to work them.
Yeah.
Wahoo's been awesome. It like very simple, also gets the job done. Had very few issues with customers. Trainers are solid. So yeah, just finding brands that are cool and work for people, that are made well and nice. You know, if it's made locally, great. Like we try to keep stuff local, try to keep it, you know, influence local, even like down to our t-shirts, we try to print them local. So yeah, to answer your question, there's like a lot of brands that we're working with, some that we've worked with and it didn't work out for us. And so mm-hmm. we just quit selling it, or the product didn't work and we just quit selling it. So ultimately I want to have a really curated shop. You know, my nice. 5-year plan is to have brands that we very, very much stand behind and are simple. Mm-hmm. I don't want someone to come in and have like the paradox of choice where it's like, well, you have 400 different bottle cages. Like which one's going to work well for me? I just bought a hybrid. I just bought like a cruiser. Like what bottle cage do I need? You know, I can show them, but I'd rather have like 3 or 4 bottle cages that just work super, super well and are simple and straightforward. And that's kind of like what we go for as far as brands.
Nice. So speaking of brands and different products that you order as a shop, what are your feelings about the direct to consumer companies such as like Canyon? I know Giant is technically, I believe, I'm pretty sure, and I should probably check my resources, but isn't Giant now being sold in Dick's Sporting Goods? But what are your thoughts about the kind of the direct to consumer? You know, do you get a lot of people that bring in bikes that are ordered online and shipped to their house? And how do you feel, does that impact, you know, the local shops and the industry?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I'm glad that you asked that. I was hoping you were going to ask some sort of like, you know, like slightly controversial question. So this is like exciting, right? The direct to consumer sales. What do bike shops think about that when you take a bike in to get worked on that you just bought online?
Yeah.
You know, so I have heard a lot of different opinions on this as far as, you know, shop opinions go. Currently, I am not against direct to consumer sales. I think that, you know, like Canyons are cool. I think they're tight. I've never sold them. I've ridden a couple. I've worked on a lot of them, which is also something that is very common, is direct to consumer bikes are probably ones that I work on the most because they've been assembled mm-hmm. by people that, maybe aren't trained on assembling bikes.
Yeah.
So, I think it comes down to, the companies are trying to sell more bikes and find easier, more direct ways to get people on bikes. I think that's a good thing. You know, I think that I could whine about it and say, well, we didn't make the money on it. But ultimately, we've been doing assemblies on bikes, especially since the inventory shortage with COVID. We kind of opened ourselves up to do more assemblies on direct-to-consumer e-bikes, you know, bikes like brands like Canyon. And people bring the boxes in and we assemble them. So I would say that I'm definitely not against it. I think that, you know, if you're going to make a decision to buy a bike direct on a website and ship it to your house and put it together in your living room, I think you should be able to do that if the brand wants to do it and you want to do it. But I think that consumers should also be aware that when you do buy something in a shop, a good shop should really give you a lot with that. And that doesn't necessarily, you know, it doesn't come on the bike the day you buy it. A lot of those are, you know, if people buy bikes in the shop, we, any bike you get, we give a year's worth of free adjustments, also a free 30-day checkover. So if you buy one online, you're going to pay for that for sure. So, you know, if that's your choice, if you want to do that, buy a new bike online, assemble it, have me reassemble it, readjust it, and then just pay every time you need a little adjustment or something. Yeah, that's the consumer's choice, and we're going to make money off of it for sure. You know, for me personally, if I was not a mechanic, I would really hope that I'd want to go into a shop and like get a bike and have that whole experience through a local bike shop. Yeah. So I'm not, to answer your question, I'm not against direct to consumer sales. And you know, I maybe felt differently about that before I opened a shop. A lot of my opinions have changed now that I've went from a consumer to working at a shop to owning a shop. I just think that consumers need to know that there are definitely things that are going to come with that sale and that experience that a good shop should give you when you purchase a bike from them.
Definitely. Yeah, no, that's great. Great info and knowledge. So the next question is kind of talking about the future and your goals. And I know we kind of touched on that earlier in this discussion, but I kind of want to talk about personal accomplishments and goals. I mean, first off, we need to talk about Mid-South. I mean, you've been trying to get me to sign up for Mid-South. And for all those that don't know what Mid-South is, and maybe you're able to describe it better than I am, but it's a huge gravel event out in Oklahoma. Do you want to kind of touch base on that a little bit?
Mid-South Gravel is this gnarly 100-mile gravel race in Stillwater, Oklahoma. And it starts and stops right outside District Bicycles. And it's really kind of become sort of this cult following. I think like a lot of gravel events have become, you know, for me, like back in the day going to, you know, road races and crits, you know, those were great. I think there's a point where it kind of became a little stale and people wanted more out of cycling. They wanted more inclusivity. They wanted to be more inclusive. That was a tongue twister there.
I know. Say that five times fast.
But they wanted the events to be more inclusive. But they still wanted to be taken serious. And so, you know, I can't really give you a real detailed history of Mid-South because, you know, I've only been racing it for maybe 4 years or so. But it's a 100-mile gravel race. If you've ridden in Stillwater, Oklahoma, or around that Tulsa area, you know the hills are just very much rolling up and down all day. So the Mid-South event now consists of 100-mile. I believe there's a 50-mile, and then they do what's called an inspiration ride that's like 10 to 12 miles where people can go out and just ride on the road. Maybe they have a friend or a spouse that's riding. They want to ride, but they don't really want to commit to the full event, so they can still be out there. Then they also have a run event as well, and which is called the Mid-South Double. And so they do that on Fridays, and then Saturday they do the bike race. Super cool event. I don't really know, you know, I had a friend that I was actually building a bike for so that he could go to Oklahoma and do that. We finished the bike like when he was on his way to leave. I mean, we finished the bike that day. I'll never forget. And this would have been in spring, or it would have been 2020. So like right when things were getting bad. And so ever since then, there was sort of this, like when he came back, it was like he had a religious experience and he was like, I was stuck in the mud and it was, you know, crazy. And like, it was just like so gnarly and like the bike is ruined now. And it was just like, you know, all these like crazy things that I wanted to know more details about. I wanted more of that. And so of course, my buddy, his name's Joe, he talked me into doing the race the next year, and I did it and fell in love. And it was a blast. And I'm sure that story is like very similar, like I said, for a lot of gravel events. But Mid-South definitely has a special place in my heart. It definitely has this cult following now. Bobby, who is kind of like the creator, and I believe part owner of District, he's kind of like the hype man. And he gives every single person a hug that finishes the race.
Wow.
So whether you're first or last,
Yeah.
Hug.
And they also have you get a hug.
You get a full on hug. He's changing t-shirts all day because he's so gross from hugging people. But like that Bobby hug is the best. It's awesome. Yeah. It's great. So anyone that's into like, even if you're thinking about getting into gravel riding or you want to race it, I highly, highly recommend that ride and or race. It is such a good experience. And it's an entire, you know, like week wrapped around that event there in Stillwater.
Mm-hmm. It's great. No, I mean, I hope one day that I can make it. It's just sometimes it's super early in the year for me. And I know the trip and
it's a heck of a drive. Yeah,
it is.
2025. We're going to do it 2025.
Right. Right. Well, I do know that people know or it's known for its wind, its hills, as well as its specific gravel.
Yes.
Dirt. It's like a red mud, right?
Yeah. It's like a red clay sort of.
Yeah.
And then there's, you know, large chunk gravel on top. And then there's also some single track creek crossings, railroad crossings. I want to say I got stopped by a train my first year.
Yeah.
You know, it's awesome. It's great. And the vibes are there. There's so much stoke out there. It's really, if you're not excited about bikes and you go out there, I can guarantee you'll be excited when you get back. So,
so future goals, like maybe this year, what's on the list? What do you got going for you personally, like racing wise? Anything fun?
Oh my goodness. Yeah. So the past couple years, you know, just like personally and with the shop and just life has been so busy for me, just like these past 2 or 3 years, especially really ever since opening the shop, I feel like it's been nonstop. So, this year I've actually kind of planned to like step back from some events and some things and not do as many, not take as many trips and just be more present at the shop. We're approaching our 5-year mark. So for me, I'm kind of getting into into like my next phase. We have some plans to expand the shop. So to open up the upstairs of our building. So, I don't necessarily want to be a larger shop, but I want to be a little more spread out, which was kind of my original vision for the shop. Be very open, very comfortable. So one of the plans is to really start like working on that project and spending time getting the upstairs open. We had planned on doing it a couple years ago, and obviously that didn't happen with the inventory shortage because I had nothing to put up there. So,
right.
And also didn't want to spend the cash if we needed to survive, you know, on a project like that. So, so that's a big goal of mine, is to kind of, take the shop into the next phase. I have some painting I want to do, some signage. It's always a work in, like in this sort of, I don't know, I guess evolving, I guess would be the right word. It's constantly evolving and changing. My ideas are changing. So yeah, upstairs is a big plan. I also want to really want to do some type of larger shop event for our 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really know what that is. I kind of have a sketch in my brain of what it's going to look like. But I really want to do some sort of like big event where the community comes in. I have a lot of out of town customers. They can come in and hang out. We can have food trucks and ride bikes and maybe have some beers and just chill. So have a good time. Celebrate the shop.
Celebrate you.
It's not. Yeah. I mean, I don't really want it to like, I really appreciate everything that anyone has done for me, especially in terms of the shop. But I really, if there's something I want to celebrate, it's the shop as a whole. And the shop is definitely, Marion Cycle Works is not Marion Cycle Works without the customers. I know that sounds kind of tacky, but this shop has evolved because of what people like and the feedback they give me, the experience I have with customers. So I really want to celebrate that. I want to celebrate the dudes that are driving from Indy to come to this tiny little shop in this small town in the middle of cornfields, you know? So I want to celebrate all of that and all the good rides we've had. And so that's another big goal of mine. I'd say if I had to, let's pick a third goal. My third goal would just to, I want to do more regular group rides. We were doing some early on and they were great. And I really want to get back into more like diversified rides where we're doing like a Sunday morning, more of like a slow roll, a cruise, and then also doing like adventure rides midweek and that sort of thing. So yeah, I'm going to stop right there. Cause that's like I think that's all I can take on this year.
Yeah. Well, this is my final and last question. We got to talk about Willie Nelson. Can we talk about Willie Nelson?
Yes, absolutely. I love talking about my son, Willie Nelson, who is like a 40-some pound otterhound rescue dog that we got from the pound, who was found just like roaming around downtown. And he is like, yeah, he's a real sweetheart, that boy. He's well-trained, and he's kind of a celebrity in town. Like, I feel like every place we go, like any tavern or restaurant or just walking around, like whoever we bump into is like, oh, it's Willie Nelson. And he's super scruffy. If anybody wants to know what he looks like, you know, you can look at like my Instagram. He had an Instagram, but I think it got hacked or something. I'm blaming him for it. So, yeah, he's a good boy. If you want to know one thing about Willie Nelson, our dog, is that he's a very good boy.
He is a very good boy. And you've personally met him, right? Met and snuggled with this dog.
That's right. Yes, absolutely. Yeah, he loved you so much.
He did. Well, I think we touched a lot of great topics. I appreciate you, one, opening up about your small business, about your shop, the ups and downs. As all small business owners and bike shop owners across the state, we all know those ups and downs and the good and the bad. But again, check Marion Cycle Works out on Facebook, Instagram. They've got a lot of great photos and content. And check out Michael on Instagram as well, obviously to see a photo of what Willie Nelson looks like. But if there's anything else that you want to say to our listeners about how to connect with you, but anything like that?
Yeah. Yeah, you can totally, we're definitely present on Instagram. We've slowed way down on Facebook. So it's kind of just a landing page now. You can check us out. Our Instagram is Marion Cycle Works, and that's Marion, not to be confused with Marion University. We get that a lot because they have a big cycling presence. So Marion, Marion Cycle Works. You can check us out on Instagram. My personal Instagram is just Michael Mathias. You're welcome to like be my friend on there, and we can share pictures of Willie Nelson or whatever.
Right.
Yeah. Other than that, like, thanks for having me. This has been a blast. I love talking bike stuff, and, hopefully we can do this again.
Definitely. So I'll drop your information in the description of the podcast. I'll hope to edit it here in the next couple of weeks and post it live. But again, really appreciate it, Michael. I hope to see you when I at least come back from the Fat and Skinny Tire Festival from Winona Lake.
Yes, yeah, hit me up.
But let's connect. And again, appreciate it. And I hope you have a really, really great day. I almost said wheelie great day, but you know. But anyway, thanks so much, and I'll talk to you soon.
All right. See you later.
All right. Take care. All right. Bye.
Hey, thanks for tuning in. We hope you really enjoyed this podcast. For more information about our organization and other future podcasts, visit www.bicycleindiana.org. Thanks for tuning in. We hope you have a really great day.